Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
The man's got guts. He's got oranges the size of beach balls.
I don't care what corporate media outlets say. I don't care what Hollywood says. I don't care what big corporations say. Here I stand. I'm not backing down.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We have arrived at a Friday. That means a Reardon Roundtable. We're not going to waste any time because we have a ton of topics to get to here this afternoon. Some developing news related to the crash as well, and I will share that with you here in just a moment. Literally, you know, it's interesting. I popped onto the Washington Post website, and there was an update that just occurred like literally 2 minutes ago, and I'll have that for you. But let's introduce the panel. First, let's say hi to Sue Thomas, who's with us this afternoon.
Hi,
Sue.
Hi.
Jane Duker, in the house on
in
this Friday.
House,
how are you?
It's Friday, and it's, you know, it's rainy, but it's Friday.
You ready to go, though?
I'm ready,
ready to
rock
throw
and roll.
Down here?
Yeah.
State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman is with us this afternoon as well. How are you?
I'm enjoying the 50 degrees, even if it's raining.
Look, absolutely. We're looking at, I think, close to damn 70 on Tuesday or something.
Let's
like
go.
That.
Yes,
I think it's Monday.
All nuts. For it.
Steve Butts is here, state representative. How are you, Steve?
Good to see you, Mark. Big game tonight, 6 o'clock. We got to beat Dayton.
Yeah, that's, you know, look, SLU's on a kind of a roll now, right?
I love that. And Mizzou.
I love that Robbie
Adler
kid.
And I know they're all panicked about the fight, but I thought it gave it some, I thought it gave the league a little cred.
I like a good crowd fight every now and again, but let me get to this news because this just cleared on the Washington Post. The Army released the names of 2 soldiers presumed dead in the collision between the Black Hawk helicopter and the American Airlines plane, but took the rare step of withholding the identity of the 3rd soldier on board the helicopter. So they've identified these 2 members of the military's Chief Warrant Officer Andrew Eves and Staff Sergeant Ryan O'Hara. Now, the 3rd soldier is a woman, and 2 officials familiar with the issue said, speaking on the condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the issue, they're not releasing the name. Now, what we do know today is the helicopter was flying above the 200-foot ceiling for helicopters in the area. The Washington Post, New York Times, a lot of other media sources have looked at the radar playback, and that's what they're reporting. We also know that the, you know, the air traffic control situation was severely understaffed. There's a situation where after 9:30 Eastern, they consolidate the number of air traffic controllers, and they're reporting in the Washington Post, New York Times, and other outlets today that they actually changed that. So the supervisor called for that change before 9:30 because in theory, after 9:30, there's less traffic. So I don't know. Jane, I'll start with you. This is just a terrible accident. Here's one thing I would say before we get going, because when I was talking about this yesterday, we had seen a fair amount of the video, but not all of the video that's emerged today. So in my mind, and I'll see if I can explain this on the radio because it's a little visual, I see the plane coming in for the landing, right? And I thought the helicopter was more directly, like, below the plane and then just was going up. But that's not the case at all. There's several seconds. I don't know how many seconds, but maybe 8 to 10 seconds where you see that helicopter directly looking like it's heading right toward the airplane because it essentially is heading right toward the airplane, and then they crash.
Because he was looking at something else. Well, I think there was a different plane that he was looking at, and I thought he was, you know, they're supposed to stay down at, what, 200?
And under that, yeah.
Yeah, they were. He was way too high.
But
that's what I heard.
Let me ask this question again, and I don't know if this has even been discussed, but isn't there a possibility at least that this was a suicide? Would that not even be possible? Because if they're over the ceiling limit and that thing was headed right toward the plane, I'm not alleging
you have to remember,
anything.
Though,
I'm just
training
saying
flights, which makes you wonder. You know that I don't know. I mean, it, you know, it may have been someone who just wasn't as experienced. If it's a training flight, it could be something that, you know, it's training. So I don't know, but it looked way too high. Like he was in the path of a plane, and the plane gets the right of way. Like, the helicopter is the one that's supposed to be out of the way.
I've seen people on Twitter acting like the pilot of the plane did something
wrong. No, the pilot, there's no way they're on instruments. When they get, when the landing gear goes down, they don't even look outside anymore. They are fully instrument, and they are,
If you're a combat, if you're a combat pilot, you're looking out.
But you have a different plane.
But this is a very different scenario, and people are applying. I mean, it's just total armchair.
No, it's the helicopter. I think the helicopter's going to be.
Well, you know, I was watching. I was watching Steve. You guys have, I think we've all been there multiple times and flown into Reagan over the river. And I was just thinking about that today when I was watching some of the video and the rescue. You still see planes flying overhead. How would you feel if you're a passenger on one of those planes and you're flying right over the Potomac River? And you know what just happened. It's got to be horrifying.
Did they?
No, it's a tragedy. I know I've flown into Reagan many times. It's way better than Dulles, but you know, I could just say until we recover all the bodies. I hate any of this speculation until families all know exactly what happened to their loved ones and those bodies are recovered. And then let the NTSB and the Pentagon and everybody else investigate it. But I hate all this speculation about what caused the accident. Clearly, some type of tragic human or computer error. But until those bodies of those loved ones are recovered, I don't think we should be doing anything except praying for them.
I mean, watching, I haven't watched the videos because you're watching people's loved ones die. I mean, I think everybody sort of forgets that for every parent who has scraped together money for their kids to be able to do travel sports, that's expensive. They dedicate their lives to helping their kids do these things they're passionate about. There's all these young people and families who are recovering these bodies, and I just
and
waiting for them to recover them. And yeah, I can't. I can't watch these people's loved ones.
You know,
Probably,
Jane, you probably agree with me, Sue, too. I might not come off as the most empathetic person on the planet all the time, but I got to tell you, this month, I have thought more about the victims of these fires, the hurricanes, and these poor people. I mean, I guess when we think of all our problems, they're nothing compared to some of this because it's just got to be devastating. I mean, it's one thing, I guess, obviously, if you lose a house and property, you can rebuild. But now you have, you know, dozens and dozens of lives that were lost. And they have recovered more than 40 bodies, Stephen.
Yeah.
How about the people? Let's just focus on some of those people who have to do that.
Just the recovery
to dive
efforts.
Down
can
and recover bodies.
You one of those divers?
No.
With the ice on top. I mean, how difficult it is with the conditions, much less.
What first responders do, you know, and I saw. I just got back from LA on Sunday night, and what they have done and are still doing there, it's unbelievable. When the our back is against the wall, these guys, men and women that are first responders, they come out and they do just a yeoman's job.
Well, they were jumping in the water. They had jet skis. They were trying to recover, you know, hopefully try to save people that it was just beyond. The only maybe saving grace is this happened so fast. You know, they both aircraft exploded and then they fell into the river right away.
Well, and hopefully you just, I mean, your heart goes out to people, but you pray that they weren't in any pain. And
exactly.
And they didn't see it coming
anymore. And pray that they can recover
their bodies. I think those pilots had to see it, though, because he was heading right toward them.
I don't know. I
don't
think they do.
They're on their instrument.
Their instrument. And I think I would be shocked if the pilot saw it.
And
Jane
Duker, State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, State Representative Steve Butts. Let's kind of broaden this out to a couple other things. We'll get to the nominations and some other things in Washington. But obviously, Mary Elizabeth, one of the stories of the day, and this continues to be a story of the day, is Trump kind of coming out of the gate with the DEI accusation. Now, I've been around this guy long enough to understand that when he says things, there's usually something there.
Yeah.
He doesn't. People think he kind of goes rogue, but he usually doesn't go rogue. He's saying something that someone has told him. He hasn't maybe processed the whole thing. And that kind of comes out when he starts to weave a little bit. Now, we don't know the answers. I didn't appreciate that coming out right away. I just didn't, because I'm thinking about families and all this stuff.
Sure.
I didn't think it was appropriate. But there is something to this, and that's going to be investigated, but the timing was awful.
Well, listen, I think that you have seen him respond in such human and warm ways when he's been caught off guard about tragedies that have happened. When RBG dies, for example, when you look at that video that was playing where they asked him the question, I think that everybody sometimes, just because we don't respond the way that you might imagine, doesn't mean that he's being inappropriate or horrible or whatever. I think that the left wants to jump on the man no matter what he does, and so they're happy to point things out that this wasn't quite right. I'm not saying you're on the left, but I
well,
just...
thank you for that.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I think that there is a knee-jerk reaction to say, like, oh, this isn't quite right, or it shouldn't have been done that. And with the pronoun executive orders that were coming out and some of the lawsuits that have been around DEI hiring, particularly in that space, I'm sure it was top of mind for him. And so you saw a real-time reaction of just the reason people are so against these types of policies is because they can have bad consequences.
Steve, I know you said you don't want speculation, and I get that, and I can appreciate that, but some of this is a little more than speculation. I'm not saying it's DEI related, but it is related to staffing issues. I think that's something that is pretty clear with the
I'm
with
sure
the
there'll come down to staffing issues. The comments on DEI, and I'm certainly not in any kind of crazy woke left, but for the president, when you are the president, when you open your mouth, and to me that guy just has diarrhea of the mouth way too often, to not be able to keep your comments to, we're going to get answers for the American people, but first we're going to recover the bodies of our fellow Americans and return them to their families. End of story. He was even doubled down. I listened to him. I said, "Are you sure? Are you saying
DEI had something to do with it?"
He said, "Well, maybe. I can't say for sure it didn't. It was completely inappropriate."
Well, that's because he knows things, and I think he knows things that aren't
being
shared
inappropriate.
Right now.
Keep your mouth shut for a week.
I get it.
You can't fight with what Steve just said. There's no argument against what you said, but also, he's working from information that everybody doesn't have, and I do think that sometimes these things come out and. Again,
yeah, because he
has
diarrhea of the mouth and he can't keep
his
mouth
shut. But you know what? But here's the thing, and I said this the other day, and Sue, remember when I said, look, I think there'd be a fair amount of agreement on this, that this guy has not had the issue with his tone and with some of the inappropriate things that he had certainly in the past. And I even gave him credit. I think it was on Tuesday for being on his best behavior, and then Wednesday happened, and then, you know, things kind of unfolded from then. I don't know, you know, where this is going to take us with the investigation, but I do think that people want answers. Now, on the DEI front, you mentioned the pronouns. This was interesting. So he banned the federal workers from using pronouns in emails today. And I cheer that on because I hate the virtue signaling, but that's going to be controversial because the Alphabet Mafia is not going to like it, Mary Elizabeth.
I just couldn't care less. And I don't think that he can either. And when you see even... Buttigieg was complying with it. You're the one who told me this before.
Well,
the
I don't know that he complied, but here's something interesting. You know, Mayor Pete wants to kind of run for president, we think, and he removed his pronouns from his Twitter X page a couple of days ago, some folks have noticed. So I don't know what that's about, but I thought that was interesting, right?
Well, I just think you see this lock on mental thinking kind of melting a little bit. People are starting to realize maybe the rest of the American people are not with you. They don't want everything to be about ideology. They don't want everything to be about pushing your agenda. They just want to live their lives and do things. And the more that you're forcing me to say something, the less I'm into you. And so I think that's maybe even just a response
I'm okay with the shift away from this nonsense, but I also think that what do you care if these people put that on their email address?
I care because I don't want to. I know you are the sex that you are, and this idea that I have to be told whether you're a man or a woman is insulting. It's stupid.
It's just ridiculous. It is ridiculous. It's virtue signaling ridiculous.
But that's my point.
You can't blame them for being offended and then you be offended.
It's because then the idea is that if I do not comply with what you're wanting, then it's going to have actual negative effects.
Well, no, nothing requires you.
I'm not offended by it. I just think it's ridiculous.
I just don't comply.
And they're federal on the federal dole, if you will.
Yeah, but I also don't think that them putting that there without requiring anything of you, it doesn't matter.
It's so dumb.
Steve, where are you on pronouns?
I don't have them on my email, and if people want to put them on their email, it's perfectly fine. Live and let live.
I think like peer pressure is going to start taking care of some of this. And what I don't want to happen is that we swing the pendulum so far back that there's going to be more backlash. I mean, Can we just not overplay the hand one time?
Why would we do that? What fun would that be?
It wouldn't be fun.
You know,
you're right.
One of the stories that came out today. Now, you guys, I'm just going to, Mary Elizabeth, we're going to have to defer to Steve and Jane on this one. But the, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has been getting ripped because he's bent the knee to Trump, and he removed the tampons from the men's restrooms at Meta, and some of the Alphabet Mafia Meta people are protesting this, and they put the tampons. I mean, think about this. Think about what's going on here. They're putting tampons in the men's room to protest. To protest what? I mean, the 95% of the country is thinking that that's nuts, right? If you're in San Francisco or wherever... What do you mean?
95%.
No, it's 98.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. It's 98, yes. Maybe more. But
with,
see, that's
the
kind of...
all the issues facing us.
But that's the kind of nonsense
with all the issues facing us.
Well, thank you, Steve, but that's the nonsense that people are sick of, for sure. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. We're coming back with much more. Hang in there.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knix Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Friday afternoon, we are joined by Jane Duker in the studio, State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, and State Representative Steve Butz. Let's go to some Jeff City stuff. Mary Elizabeth, I'll start with you. There is a new sheriff in town in Jeff City as well. Mike Kehoe, obviously inaugurated a couple weeks ago. He did the State of the State address this week, highlighting some of the priorities, and certainly education came up. But thoughts on the new Kehoe administration and everything that's happening in Jeff City right now?
Yeah, you bet. So we're off to a really productive, fast start. Kehoe is hitting the ground running. He's laid out some really bold visions to try to bring safety and security back to the state, to expand education choice, to change how the funding formula is done for our school districts, which maybe you guys are listening and yawning, but that is a massive fight he's decided to take on to try to make sure that all school districts get what they need to educate kids and parents have more choice to send their kids where they should. So I thought, you know, a really strong vision laid out by the governor in his first State of the State. You could see a continuation of Governor Parson's priorities. Of course, he was his pick for lieutenant governor, and so there's respect and continuity of that agenda. But I thought a bold new vision, a lot of what he'd campaigned on. So it's nice to see that delivering right out of the bat, saying, okay, this is where we're going to go.
Republicans have a supermajority, Steve, but what are the Democrats going to focus on?
Yeah, no, there was a lot of bipartisan agreement. There was a lot of standing ovations, both sides.
Yep.
And I'll say he spoke quite a bit on the importance of expanding early childhood education and just like daycare opportunities so that parents can get back into the workforce. I know that was in the previous administration. It just didn't really get done. But I think a lot of people say, Kehoe's the kind of guy that he's sort of a unicorn, right? I mean, he's got those really good urban roots for us, born and raised North St. Louis, successful, you know, rancher and businessman, well-liked by unions. He just brings a lot of people together. He's a business guy, and I think he'll cut some deals
and
get some stuff done. He is a deal maker.
He's a deal maker.
And I think people believe in his integrity, and he just has a lot of political capital right now, and I think he's going to use it. He's going to use it for the state board.
Yep.
Police commissioners, I believe.
Yep. I made it very clear right out of the gate.
He did.
I mean, it's his number one issue, and he stacked
on crime. You mean
on crime and state takeover in particular? He had representatives from every branch of law enforcement that he highlighted right out of the gate. I mean,
by the way, I saw him heavily praise Chief Tracy as well.
He did.
Thoughts on that, Jane? And where is the state control bill?
It's moved faster than it has since we introduced it, you know, in 2017.
I mean, think Nick's bringing out a committee.
So, yeah. So, it'll be on the calendar and soon. So, that'll be good. And we've gotten all indications from leadership that whatever it takes to get this done, it's going to get done. So, that is very heartening. And, you know, I mean, the chief is clearly... getting more and more upset because I think he's getting a lot of pressure from the mayor to fight this with every tooth and nail. When it's going to make his job easier, it's going to make his job better. And so I find that interesting. So the mayor is really at this point now. She didn't show up for 3 years, and then this year she decided, this has legs, and I, you know, better try to fight it. But I don't think she's going to be successful.
She has no relationships. No,
she has no
capital.
Relationships, and yeah. she was very nasty to the legislators during these hearings.
Okay,
and it doesn't go well.
Because I went to both the Senate hearing and the House mm-hmm. hearing, and to the mayor's credit, and I'm not her biggest political supporter, but to her credit, she was there. She addressed the issues the best she could. I thought she actually did a very good job. That mutual respect thing went both ways. You could see there was a tone in the questioning that, you know, I didn't think was necessary. But, you know, there's a couple people, Nick Schroer, and they just can't
he didn't
seem
say a word.
To help themselves.
I didn't think I will
Nick
say
Nick didn't say a word.
I didn't think
he
Nick
wasn't
was
allowed, and he didn't say a single word.
I don't think Nick was inappropriate.
Listen to the tape.
Come on, Mark.
In his remarks, he spoke.
Nick, if you're listening, I support you.
He wasn't allowed to ask questions.
They shut him down.
Yeah.
But
do
you think this is going to pass? So if it passes, what's the timetable we're looking at? And then what's
the August.
Process?
The bill okay. says August.
If it passes, it'll be the end of August, right?
But listen, just for people listening, Jane's right. It's moving quickly, but like legislative quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
So I want to. Oh.
But we
have everyone moderate
we haven't
their
been in Senate committee before spring break in 4 years. So that's why this is the quickest it's ever been. The House is not the issue. It's going to be getting it through the Senate. And you know, we're ahead of spring break, which we haven't been. So that is on
legislative
time.
Nothing has gotten through the Senate.
And I'm you guys, I know you really deserve your spring break, too. I hope you have that whole week carved out.
So
I'm worried about
you. It's almost 2 weeks,
yeah.
I hope.
Gosh, man, I tell you what, that can't come soon enough. Let's talk a little bit about education, because what the governor said is kind of framed around some things that are pretty tragic and sad, and that's the learning loss amongst a lot of kids in this country. And there's more research that's come out. My daughter's in fourth grade. They indicate that fourth graders, you know, look, we've got countries that where English is not their primary language. They're performing better in English than we are in this country right now. So there's some significant challenges. Steve, I'll be honest. I don't know what the answer is because government can't solve all this. But there is a crisis post-COVID. And, you know, this is affecting older kids. And some of these older kids might not be able to catch up. But how do you really grasp this and get a handle on it and make sure that this doesn't slide even further?
Yeah, so
because it hurts
the
country.
Do I think I have all the answers? No, I don't. But I can tell you clearly, we went through a once in a 100-year event. Surely, if this country rebuilt itself after the Great Depression, World War II, the Civil War, we can overcome the learning deficiencies from 18 months in COVID.
But not if we keep doing the same things, Steve.
You know, here's what we need to do, though. So we have to make a serious, ongoing commitment. We've been raising funding at the state level. It still needs to be more. I know some of you guys don't like to hear it. Teachers need to be paid more.
Well,
just
that's
like we
not
say,
my objection.
Cops
that's
need
not
to be
fair.
Paid more. Teachers need to be paid more. We need to get more people, better people into the profession, smaller class sizes.
Look, of course, all those things
reading,
are true.
But wait, but
all
bringing,
the above.
Bringing people into the profession is important, and that is a challenge right now. And I don't know how, because when you have teachers that are going to get sick and tired of some of the nonsense that's going on out there, yep. they're going
to
retire, and then what's going
to
happen?
I was just
I'm
talking
a teacher's
to
kid.
Normandy.
Listen, both of my parents are public school teachers. I agree. We have got to get more teachers into the classroom who have more authority to meet the needs of their kids, more money for teachers. We've seen administrative costs go up astronomically in the last 20 years since the last rewrite of
Here's
the
an idea. Maybe pay teachers more and cut out the DEI crap
ding,
because
ding,
let's
ding.
Take a look at Webster and Kirkwood and Parkway and even Rockwood, how much money they've spent on that crap, which hopefully is going to stop. There, give it to the teachers. I'm fine
and
with that.
And how many superintendents they have of this and that. So you have more and more administrators. You
I
have
agree with that. Flatten the system.
Well, you know why?
100%.
Here's the thing. They have a lot of administrators because Desi Platt passes a lot of rules but doesn't really offer
well,
any money
that,
or anything helpful.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big problem. I mean,
well, is there a way to reform that?
Absolutely.
Yes, you have to give teachers more ability to innovate. You can't, they are so strong. The testing, okay, first of all, the testing is a joke. Okay, the testing does not test what needs to be tested. And especially if they don't get the results until they've already been promoted. So the testing is a joke. It does not really measure achievement, okay? So I disagree with that.
I think there's a certain amount of truth to that, yeah.
And I think that if, it, you know, DESE, if they want to make all the rules, then they should provide the personnel to implement all the nonsense. So I do think that DESE needs to get out of the way a little bit and let, you know what, maybe in urban areas they need to have smaller classes, have longer school days, things that are tailored toward that district. But they've tried to make everything, you know, perfectly the same, and it's just not possible. We have to do something differently.
Listen, getting DESE out of the way is something you'd be hard-pressed to find any conservative who would have an objection for. DESE has, as you say, tremendous impact, tremendous influence over what's going on, and has all these extra rules and regs and garbage that has nothing to do with outcome.
Yet, they said, SLPS is great, even though the administrators are spending all the money at Hooters and on the credit card. When I heard that DESE said, you know, we still think they're going to be okay, that really concerned me.
Well, that was not what DESE said. That was what the state board said. State board didn't have a second, and that's a different entity. But DESE continues to have more and more authority, and I think that carving that back and getting them out of that is hugely appropriate.
Yeah. Meantime, Steve, in St. Louis Public Schools, I think I saw a headline in the local paper yesterday or the day before, did the SLPS board give too much leeway to the superintendent? Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Should they be somewhat responsible?
You know, it's just sad that one person, and I'm sure it's not literally just one person, but clearly, and I've complained at every level I could, the FBI, the auditor's office, Dr. Keisha Scarlett was a fatal mistake in hiring that woman. And I don't know. Yeah, it's going to take a couple of years at least to undo the damage. And it's just where the city kids, the vast majority of them, they're just stealing from poor kids.
I know.
And kids that are underprivileged already, that still have a deficit from COVID. And I'm like, really? Is this where we're at? It was just beyond disgusting to me. So, you know, I mean, I know we've got school board elections coming up. I'm sure hardly anybody will pay attention to it. I hope we do, my fellow city voters. But, you know, they got to make a good hire and get the right superintendent in there and lose some of that oversight and give more authority to the principals at the local school, which I hear they don't have much of.
No, they don't. And SLPS needs a lot of things. And there is no incentive for any teacher to try new things. They have these administrators who walk around with their little computers and tell them what needs to be on their lesson plan for the day. And I'm like, you know, these are teachers.
I know a few of the schools, and I'll just say at Merrimack Elementary in my district on Merrimack Street in Dutchtown, they are trying to be innovative. Good. But I don't think we appreciate 50% of all the kids in there. They're like transient, right? I mean, they're just like homeless. And they start the beginning of the year, they end the beginning of the year with 200 kids, and 100 of them are not the same kids every year. There are some challenges that come with really, really tough poverty and brutal home life that makes educating the kids difficult.
This is why I recommend, look, if I was hiring the next superintendent in St. Louis Public Schools, I would hire my friend Tiffany Anderson, who now runs the Topeka Public Schools, because she turned Jennings around and she is a dynamo. I emailed her this week because I was invoking her name. She's a true leader, and she didn't sit in meetings, and she went out in the crosswalks every morning to meet the kids and the parents, and she knew, and I was out there with her, she knew that some of these kids didn't even sleep on a bed the night before. Maybe they didn't have breakfast, but she was involved from a non-bureaucratic standpoint to really turn education in that district around, and she achieved it. And then she went to Topeka, a big school district, but there's not enough Tiffany Andersons out there, because my fear is you hire someone in St. Louis Public Schools, and what are they going to focus on? Race, and
well,
diversity.
This is why I thought that the governor's statement at the State of the Union or the State of the State was so great, was because he was outlining really bold things and saying, listen, if we've got people in the State Board of Education who don't agree with the way that the state is going, or if are pushing ideology, you're not going to get to stay in your seat. Hey, by the way, we're going to rewrite the funding formula to get everybody what they need to learn. And so those are big fights that don't have easy solutions, and I think Governor Kehoe is the guy to push that forward. So I'm excited about
on
that.
On the funding formula, look, I've covered this funding formula for decades, literally in Missouri, and it's always the complaint, the it's not funded fully, but education funding does go up every year.
Billions of dollars. So this is the thing, and why I think it's so important that he's addressing this, is in the 20 years that the funding formula has been enacted, we have put billions more into education. We have 30,000 fewer children in our school districts. Part of that's because homeschooling numbers are going up. Part of that is because we have a population decline, because people aren't having enough kids. I mean, there's kind of a natalist view that's taking place across the country. But we aren't attracting big business. We've got to do a better job of growing our population. And so when we have results that going down, we have fewer kids in the school, and we have more money that's being spent, something drastic has to change, or we're going to keep getting the same results.
For any kid, that's in school, whether it's SLPS or wherever, to me, it's reading, reading, reading.
I mean,
our reading scores are terrible. I'm like, if you can't read, you guys think about it. You can't do anything else in life.
I get this is for me, it's very frustrating because I have two children, as you guys know, who are older. They're 28 and 25, or about to be. And then I have my little 10-year-old. And, you know, I saw more attention to reading with my kids when they were in, you know, this age group than I am with my daughter. And it seems like she's checking a box off. Now, this is bad parenting, I'll admit, because there's too much screen time involved. But do we have enough kids that actually want to read? All of us read books. It's one of my deep regrets of life. I don't read nonfiction. Fiction. I used to read a lot of fiction. I'm making an excuse because I'm always reading for the job and I'm reading every newspaper article. But I worry about how many of these kids actually want to read.
Yeah, you have to inculcate a
I didn't
love
want to
of
read
reading
much later
early
in life.
On.
You
know,
you didn't, Jane? No, I mean, I liked the bookmobile. That was my favorite part of reading, was going to the bookmobile. But my love for reading came later.
But you know, a lot of these kids.
But they didn't. I mean, but the school still made me learn how to read.
You learn to read.
I mean, it's just it's not an option.
Well, you know
I
what
mean,
they do now.
It's not negotiable.
I don't think all this is bad, but you know what's very popular? These graphic novels. So they always have pictures, and it keeps the kids engaged. But I'm worried about it, and the reading scores are down, Steve, to your point, and I'm not sure what all the answers are. Hang in there. We're going to talk about some of the media aspects of this week and a little bit more. Last segment of the roundtable coming up. Well, Fridays mean we have a little fun in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll have Sue's News and then Paul Hall on entertainment, some movie recommendations, television streaming, if you will, as we head into the weekend, and also Frank Cusimano on sports in the 4 o'clock hour. We have a Reardon roundtable going on right now. One more segment. Jane is here and she's going to hang out in the next hour. State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman and State Representative Steve Butts. A couple things. I want to get back to some of the national stuff in the media, but there was this plan that was sort of unveiled, and this has been in the works. The guy buys the AT&T building. How much did that thing cost, like 300 something million to build it, and they sold it for
like 18 years ago for $260 million. It was just sold for about $3.8 million.
Like, we could have done that. We could have bought that in this room, and we could have
been what the taxes are, but yeah, $3.8 million.
Now, Jane, what is the taxes on that?
I don't know.
Yeah, who pays their taxes anyway? But Jane, this guy wants to put 600 luxury apartments in the heart of downtown. Now, I get that the entire city is not crime ridden, but I would put the area where we're sitting right now toward the arch and not the best situation right now.
I mean, well, we sit below luxury apartments that they're having trouble filling. So,
In this building.
In Park Pacific. And beautiful views, beautiful condos, and they're having trouble, you know, leasing them and getting them filled. So 500, 600 new ones seems a little unrealistic to me. And, you know, and this is the thing. I mean, and you know what? It's a very bold idea. I mean, you want people thinking like that. But, you know, I also think that we have to be realistic about the probability of something like that. I mean, remember when Green Street came and offered the world, and look where we are now. I mean, it's all in bankruptcy.
I would love to be excited about it to revitalize downtown. But I'm, you know, I was at Katie's Pizza and Pasta last night, the one in, you know, I guess it'll be Town and Country.
Yeah.
And great restaurant, one of my favorites, but they have a place at Ballpark Village. But let's talk a little bit about Ballpark Village, because some of these places have been struggling outside of baseball anyway. Now you're going to face a year where there's not going to be nearly 3 million fans going to Busch Stadium. What happens to some of those businesses even down there?
And those condos.
Well, that's why it's important. I think, you know, as the longest living city person in the room, that's why I think it's critical about the whole crime thing in the city, whether it's the narrative about crime or the reality about crime. People don't feel that safe when they come downtown. I can guarantee you that as a guy that's lived in the city his whole life, I hear that from city residents, not just county residents and others. I think if that gets done, this downtown area has to be revitalized. And the AT&T Tower, along with the Millennium Hotel, just to pick two that aren't crazy. I mean, they aren't destroyed the way the Railway Exchange building is. If you've been inside the Railway Exchange, I don't even see the vision for it. It is like a nuclear bomb went off in there. But the AT&T building, which is 1 million square feet, it's the biggest office building in the state. It's in remarkably good shape. It has not been vandalized. This would be a major, big project. I'm glad they're dreaming big. I've met with the developer from the East Coast. Would it be a grand slam? It would be. But You got to think bold.
I don't want to be misunderstood because I would not root against it. I would hope that something like that would succeed. But let me just offer the area around where we're sitting right now as another example. Jane, yes. We all know this. And this is one of my little pet peeves. And Steve, you know this. We got two parks. We got a park and we got City Hall that have had gates around them for 16 months now. Yeah. Ever since Kamala Harris graced us with her presence in October of 2023. And we want people to come and move to the city, and we can't even remove the gates around a park? Well, how do you do that?
Still closed for renovation, I think.
Yeah, renovation. That's what they say.
There's been no renovation.
They said, and you know this, Steve, because I did that. I had to go through a Freedom of Information Act, and they told me that the reason that they closed Pelker Park is because they were letting the grass seed. It's taken a year and a half for grass seed to take hold at Pelker Park. It's ridiculous. But no one's going to do anything about it. Tashar doesn't care.
Right. Well, we got an election coming up in March, and city residents are going to have to decide, hey, are you happy with the direction of the city or not? Here's a chance to make a change.
I think there's going to be a reckoning. I really do. I am seeing people, normal people, saying, we're done. Like, the storm was the end for her. I know we had this discussion when the storm first happened, and we disagreed on this. I said, this is going to be what kills her, and I think it's going to. And
Steve, do you agree with that?
I said it would have if the election would have been 10 days ago. Yeah. I think there would have been a landslide loss. But by the time we vote in March and in April, I don't think it's going to be top of mind. I just know for us to not have a plan, I happen to be for a playoff game in Kansas City against the Texans, and to think they had 300 trucks out with 400 city employees and their residential streets were all plowed. And for us to say we bought three pickup trucks with plows, I was like, I even talked to my own alderwoman. I said, three? Think of what you're saying. That's enough to do with some parking lots. I get it. It's 300. Now we got a number, but you got to have a plan with contractors and city trucks.
Well, I think the city of Arnold was running six. I mean,
yeah, even in Arnold.
What did she say, Steve, when you said we need more than three?
Yeah, well, I don't think she realized the size of the problem. Right. Like, three is really going to do something
to buy. But shouldn't she have realized?
Yes, she should have.
Hey, you know what? If you've never actually had to arrange for snow plowing at your own office building, like mine's got 75 parking spots, you need one pickup truck just to do that.
Just to do that. But what I think it is, maybe people won't remember the snow exactly, but what I think it laid bare was their inability to do the basics.
Right.
Because the snow removal led to the trash problem. And so if you can't do trash and you can't do snow, people lose confidence that you can do anything. And so I think people have seen that, oh my gosh, the emperor really does have no clothes and this government
but
is a joke.
I'm going to ask a question here. And Sue, you can weigh in on this too. Do people in St. Louis realize that we're on the cusp of an election? Because it's not really covered at all. So do the residents even know that this is on the line right now? It's a legit question.
They will in another month.
I think they will.
You know, there's election fatigue. I mean, just to pile on here with the snow thing, when the streets director got brought before the Board of Aldermen, who had to have the hearing because we were all really upset, said, well, I was lied to by my staff, and it's so obvious. He said, so you're the streets director, and you mean to tell me you're not out in a four-wheel drive supervising?
Right.
What else are we doing?
Then you are not. You should not be the streets director.
Right.
I mean, and here's the thing. I mean, this idea that, and of course, remember when they were going to do the trash blitz last Saturday to make sure that people got their trash
picked
up?
Oh, yeah, what happened with that?
Well, they were calling drivers in for disciplinary hearings because, you know, there was, I guess, the day after the storm or 2 days after the storm, it was their regular day off and they didn't come into work. And so now they're being disciplined. I'm like, this is a leadership issue, okay? Like, if you don't have the truck drivers doing what they're supposed to be doing, that is a leadership problem. And it's the same. it's the same department.
Now, we did pick up a bunch of trash, to be fair. They really did.
But they were dragging drivers in for disciplinary hearings on a Saturday, okay? Like, these people don't do anything on the weekends, and they're doing this. So, you know, I think people are like, oh, my gosh, this is as bad. And they want to talk about all these highfalutin ideas and transformation.
I just wonder if it's resonating. All right, a couple more topics I want to get to here. Man, I love a good brawl at a basketball game. We referenced it earlier at the SLU game. Steve, what the hell happened? They got a game tonight. That just got nasty the other night, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, and it was unfortunate. It was just crazy. It was late in the game. I've been a season ticket holder for 30-plus years, and my section's 102. We're looking right at the visitor's bench. And, you know, what exactly happened, I don't know. There's some trash talking, you know, with a kid that's on VCU.
Who was recruited by Travis Ford,
right? So, you know, and he went to Vashon. I guess some kids knew the kids. And there were just things said, and I think, you know, rumor had it. It's more than rumor now at this point. I think his mom was there, and there was just, I'm sure there were things said at a basketball game. What made it a bigger story is it was very late in the game. Yep. And
they had
CBS Sports. It was a very long timeout, about 3 minutes. But CBS Sports couldn't break away.
Right. No commercials.
The next game wasn't ready to tee up, and there was no commercials. Right. So they couldn't break away from the feed.
All they had to do was talk about the brawl.
Wow. Otherwise, it would have just been Rammer on the radio.
That makes more sense to me.
Who didn't make it. And that's really why it became a bigger story.
Yeah.
It wasn't that big of a fight. It was just pushing and shoving in the crowd.
My takeaway when I looked at it is I'm always shocked at how pathetic fights look in person. Right? Like, if you've ever been a kid and you fought with your siblings, they felt like a big deal. I'm sorry, that's my last reference of a fight was with my siblings when I was a kid. But then you look at grown-ups fighting and it's always like, that was a big fight. But, like, I just feel like a little bit of...
So it wasn't a whole bunch of punches being thrown.
No, but a dude had blood on his face.
Yeah, there was some pushing.
And,
you know, when you're
pushing
and it's crowded there. And, you know, if you get pushed from behind, you're going to go forward and fall.
So is that game tonight at home?
Yeah. Tonight.
Are you going?
I'm going.
Well, listen, if you weren't satisfied with the size and scope of that fight, start another one tonight, Butts.
Hey, look, I think it gave him some cred. I'm like, look, you know what? I mean, this stuff happens in the SEC all the time.
Welcome to the SEC.
Welcome to the A-10.
Let's go. I love it. A-10 is getting. You know, they're
a big game tonight. So come on down and buy a ticket. Let's sell out Chaffetz. It's the whiteout game.
Go
Look,
Pelicans.
To broaden this point out further, college basketball is there are so many good teams, and this tournament in March is going
to
be incredible.
Amazing.
I think every team is beatable. And look, a team like Mizzou can beat any team in the nation on a given night. They're good enough to do that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of exciting. I'm not saying they will. I don't see them as a Final Four
team. We got the best sharpshooter in the nation at 50% on his three-point shooting.
As long as they peak at the right time.
That's right. All right, Jane, you're going to hang out in the next hour. Mary Elizabeth, great to see you. I'm going to Jeff City to do a little tour in a couple of weeks, so I'll see you up there. Yeah, it's going
to
be fun. I think even Steve Butts is going to make some time for me, I'm told.
I'll give you some free coffee.
Can I get on your schedule, Steve?
Oh, you can get on my schedule.
Well, thanks for coming in, and I appreciate it. And that wraps another Reardon Roundtable on this Friday afternoon. Jane, you're going to hang out in the next hour. We're going to have a little fun. We'll talk a little television. I want to talk. Did you, Jane, watch the concert last night for the fire victims?
No, I did not.
Well, part of it was really good, but I had a little bit of a parenting dilemma in the middle of watching this last night. I'll share that right before Sue's News, which is coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.